This is Sheffield Live.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insight and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We are committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
We're open for business live.
Good morning. It's just after 9 o'clock. It's Friday, the 22nd of July, 2016. My name's Jamie Veitch. I'm your host for the next hour for Sheffield Live's business and social enterprise programme, Business Live. We're broadcasting, as ever, live from Sheffield Live's radio studios above the showroom workstation on 93.2 FM, but also sheffieldlive.org. This programme will be available as a podcast on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. Talking about podcasts, if you missed last Friday's programme, which featured Mark Story talking about the challenges of being a charity chief executive, and Jill White and Cosmas Eleferiou talking about the Peter Jones Enterprise Academy, you can catch the podcast of last Friday's show there on the Sheffield Live website. But what's coming up today? Well, today in the studio, we have Jay Biani, Biani HR and Employment Law. And Jay's going to be talking with us about when is it too hot to work? What does the law say? It's been a hot week, so you can find out more later on in the programme. We also have Melvin Davenport of Melport Plastics and inventor of WattFlow, an innovative device that will save you water. How? Well, you'll have to keep listening to find out. And on the programme, we have Colette Weimer. Colette's the chair of the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network, which at its summer event last night announced a new grant programme for social enterprises. So Colette will tell us more about that in an interview that we recorded last night. But before we turn to our guests, a quick update of some of the things going on in business and social enterprise. Figures released this week by the Office for National Statistics showed that of the 126,000 new jobs created in the UK in the 3 months to May 2016, 83% of them were self-employed. So nearly one in six of UK workers are self-employed. Now that's a trend closely associated with the rise of the so-called gig economy, with flexible workers paid for piecemeal tasks. And this week, Birkenhead MP Frank Field urged new Prime Minister Theresa May to launch a policy review into the classification of self-employment after an investigation by The Guardian newspaper into labour practices at courier firms. Another case has begun this week at the Central London Employment Tribunal, and this is about the gig economy, with lawyers arguing that taxi firms' drivers should be classified as workers. Law firm Lee Day and trade union GMB are arguing during the hearing that drivers working for taxi hailing app Uber should be classified as workers rather than as self-employed contractors. Now, that would, of course, entitle them to rights, including holiday pay and a national minimum wage. And Annie Powell, who's an employment lawyer at Lee Day, said that they're claiming that Uber is wrongly classifying its drivers as self-employed. She said this results that drivers being denied rights and protections that Parliament intended them to have. But Joe Bertram, who's a regional general manager at Uber UK, say that more than 30,000 people in London drive with their app, and this case only involves a very small number. Joe Bertram says the main reason people choose to partner with Uber is so they can become their own boss and pick their own hours. And a professor of industrial relations from the University of Warwick by the name of Jimmy Donaghy has said that these cases, which will test the employment status of various workers, whether the courier workers in the case highlighted by Frank Field MP or this Uber case, these cases could prove pivotal. The largest UK-Chinese investment deal outside of London has been signed, which is set to see Sheffield benefit from £1 billion worth of construction projects over the next 60 years. Sheffield City Council has signed the deal. It's unlocking initial funding worth around £220 million to fund up to five city centre projects in the next 3 years with the Sichuan Guodong Construction Group. And the council visited its Chinese sister city, Chengdu. The exact projects are yet to be shaped, but Councillor Julie Dore, leader of Sheffield City Council, says it's up to the council exactly which projects are going to benefit from the investment. So, quick mention, it's always worth getting in touch with this programme if there's something you think we should be covering, or if you want to suggest a topic to discuss, put yourself or someone else forward as a guest. You can get in touch, email jamie at sheffieldlive.org, text 07904 272 200. Find me on Twitter, Jamie Veitch. Find Sheffield Live on Twitter as well. Whether you're starting, whether you're running a business or a social enterprise, whether you're an employer or an employee, we're always keen to hear from you. So let's turn now to our first guest of this morning. I'm delighted to welcome back to the studio, Jay Bowerney. Jay, good morning.
Morning, Jamie.
Thanks very much for coming in today.
You're welcome.
It is a hot day, but it isn't as hot as it has been, is it?
No. It's been unbearable for lots of people.
Absolutely unbearable. And I thought it'd be worth asking you to come in to talk about when is it too hot to work? What does the law say about temperatures? Because the outside temperature has risen to something like 33 degrees in parts of the country. The temperature inside offices has been baking. Mm. Now, as an employer, do you have a duty to keep the workplace cool as a worker, an employee? Can you go home? What does the law say about it?
Well, interestingly, there's no set maximum temperature. There is a set minimum temperature of between 13 and 16 degrees. But what the law says is that the temperature must be reasonable. And reasonable is a term that's used a lot in legal terms. But what it means is that it's got to be reasonable for the particular workplace. So what might be reasonable in an office is different from what might be reasonable in an already hot environment like a laundry or something. So it's really for the employer to carry out some sort of risk assessment and take into account the views of its employees if the employer is facing lots of complaints.
Right. So the onus here is on the employer. And as you say, I mean, a laundry or, say, a steel foundry would be a really hot environment to work in anyway. But an office would normally not be. So there's a set minimum temperature, but as an employer, you have to maintain a reasonable temperature. Now, does that then lead to different interpretations of what is reasonable and arguments that reach court?
Yeah, absolutely. Because what's reasonable to some people in terms of temperature, even without a heat wave, it is very different, isn't it?
Yes,
so
quite.
Certainly when I've worked in offices myself where you've got an age profile, particularly if I may say women of a certain age, we may find it hotter at times than other employees. And yes, you can't really legislate for that. You can help with that by providing fans or perhaps even moving workstations so that somebody who's particularly feeling the heat is closer to a window. But there's no actual requirement to put in air conditioning or to take any big steps to change a workplace unless it's oppressive. So an employer always has a duty to provide a safe working environment.
Yes, of course. And
if there's a number of employees who are unhappy with that, I'm sure that most employers would be told. From in terms of employment law issues to be aware of, what might happen is that an employee or more than one employee might raise a formal grievance if they feel that they're not being heard. And the sort of consequence of that following it through could be that employees resign and claim constructive dismissal on the basis that their position was untenable because their working environment wasn't safe or wasn't such that allowed them to be able to do the job that they're employed to do.
Indeed. Okay. So As an employer, you have your normal duty of care, and you need to, of course, if someone were to, in that example, raise a grievance, you would have your grievance procedure to follow. Mm-hmm. Now, some employers listening to this may not have those procedures in place. They should have those procedures in place in any case, of mm-hmm. course. Now, what if you go into work because it's really, really hot, wearing shorts, and your employer doesn't like that?
Mm. Well, most workplaces have some sort of dress code, whether it's written or if it's implied into that working relationship. Having a written dress code is always preferable, but I think applying the dress code is something that an employer can do, and you don't have to vary too much from that. But having some flexibility in that is sensible if it's really hot. So there are actually still workplaces where a man would be expected to wear a suit and keep a jacket on and wear a tie. It's perfectly reasonable to expect an employer to make some allowances if it's hot and allow him to take his jacket off and perhaps not wear his tie. But it might not be acceptable to say, well, it's okay in that sort of working environment to come in wearing shorts. Mm. Women quite often are at the at the forefront of those sorts of decisions about whether dress wear is appropriate in the summer. And I've had more than one discussion with clients over the years about whether their employees are coming in appropriately dressed for the workplace. Mm. And in fact, there was a case reported recently in, I think it was, in Liverpool or somewhere perhaps, of a lorry driver who's turned into work with, Preston, I think it was, who turned into work wearing shorts. And this was a lorry driver.
Yes.
But he was sent home because of health and safety reasons.
Really?
Now, I'm not entirely sure what those reasons were. Perhaps it was to protect the health and safety of people who might have to look at him in his shorts. I don't know. But it seems to defy logic to me that sort of strict interpretation would be placed in that sort of job.
Yes, quite. Yeah. Mm. So I suppose the message here then is if we were to find that temperature increases once again, perhaps summer's over. Who knows?
Yeah, probably.
But as an employer, you need to be reasonable. Mm. You need to listen to your employees, and you need to adopt some degree of flexibility so that people are comfortable. Yeah. and listen to employees. Now, as an employee, then you can perhaps expect some degree of flexibility to enable you to do your job. Mm. But that will be within the parameters of the dress code of your particular workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. And we talked at the top of the program today about Office for National Statistics figures about self-employment and how so many of the new jobs created in the UK in the first 3 months of the year were self-employed. 83% of the new jobs created were self-employed. And I also mentioned a couple of cases, high-profile cases relating to the so-called gig economy, mm-hmm. Uber, whether it's drivers should be classified as workers. And Frank Field calling on the Prime Minister to launch a policy review into the classification of self-employment. And this is perhaps moving on from 0 hours contracts and exclusive contracts are things that have had a lot of attention. And in fact, you and I have talked about exclusive clauses in 0 hours contracts in the past. Now the attention is on self-employment and whether people who are classed as self-employed are really, could those Uber drivers actually work for anyone else? Are they really self-employed and so on? Mm. Are people using self-employment, are employers using self-employment to sort of bully people into not receiving employment rights, do you think? Mm. What's your view on what's going on?
Well, as an employment solicitor, I see it from all angles.
Of course.
I see it from individuals who really enjoy the flexibility of working in a way that they want. So they choose their hours, they They choose to work for other people as well because there's no exclusivity in this sort of working relationship, and they like what self-employment brings. But I also see it from the point of view of the employer, where it gives them a degree of flexibility. And then you hear stories about people that really feel they've got no option but to be forced into that sort of environment. I must say that if you ask for my opinion, not really as an employment lawyer, but just as a business person, as an individual, I think that these working relationships provide some flexibility that's positive. And if the government has been encouraging an entrepreneur economy, encouraging work-life balance, then the principle of having more people able to be self-employed surely is a good one. There are, of course, different working relationships. So you've got employees who have the highest level of protection, but they also have the highest level of obligation to their
yes.
employers. And then you have workers who are somewhere in the middle yeah. where they have certain rights, like the right to the national minimum wage and holiday pay, but they don't have other rights, so they can't bring a claim for unfair dismissal and discrimination.
Indeed.
And then you have the self-employed, who are at the bottom of the rung when it comes to their employment rights. So really, they have none for all practical purposes. And that's the group that I think the government is now focusing on, saying, well, if there's such a growing number of people choosing self-employment, should we be protecting them better? I don't know. We'll wait and see, you know, how they might be protected.
And in many ways, a lot will depend on the outcome of these cases, which may be seen as test cases, the Uber case, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, Jay, thanks so much for joining us on the programme today. And of course, it's always worth flagging that if you're an employer running a business, a social enterprise or a charity, and you need to ensure that your own policies are up to date, then there are people around who can help you do that. And the Jay, of course, is one of them with the services that you offer and provide to people. So thank you for sharing your expertise with us today. And if people want to contact you and find out more about that expertise, they can do so through your website. Would you like to give out the website address for us, Jay?
Yes, thanks, Jamie. It's www.byarneylaw.co.uk.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today, Jay Byarney, Byarney HR and Employment Law. And you're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. We're going to take a break for a quick track of music. The Dandy Warhols are coming to Sheffield this weekend for Tramlines, playing on the main stage at the Ponderosa. So we're going to play one of their tracks, We Used to Be Friends.
This is Sheffield Live.
You're listening to Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. Business Live is our weekly social enterprise and business programme every Friday morning. And on the programme this morning already, we've been talking with Jay Byarney of Byarney HR and Employment Law. When is it too hot to work? What does the law say? Jay's given us some advice on that. If you've only just tuned in and you've missed that, panic not, because the podcast for today's programme will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. Now, the track of music that we've just played was the Dandy Warhols. They are, of course, coming to Sheffield this weekend for Tramlines, the music festival taking over the city. And they'll be playing at the main stage at the Ponderosa. So more Tramlines picks later on in the programme. But I'm now delighted to welcome to the studio Melvin Davenport of Melport Plastics and inventor of WattFlow, and highly commended in the Energy Efficiency and Retrofit Awards, and winner of the Regional Small Scale Project of the Year from Greenlight. Congratulations,
thank
Melvin.
You very much, Jamie. And
good morning.
Good morning.
So first of all, I've had a look at WattFlow, and there's a fantastic animation about it, WattFlow. But
yes.
tell me about it in a nutshell. Tell listeners about what WattFlow does.
Well, WattFlow saves you water, saves you money, and it saves energy. It's an invention that I've come up with, having the experience of my tool-making background of 50 years.
Yes.
and realising to save water and using plumbing fittings and diverters, I could put a web down the centre of a pipe,
right,
or pipe ending, whether it be on a T-shaped fitting on three different pipe ends, not necessarily the length of a pipe, but on plumbing fittings, which the innovation takes over on all these plumbing fittings and includes lengths of pipes as well.
Right, so you have this sort of this web, this fitting,
yes,
within the pipe, and these can fit into downpipes from the house.
Yes.
And then water that comes in goes into some sort of a pump system. What happens next?
Well, it's diverted with the invented embodiment web.
Yes.
Into a water butt or tank.
Yeah.
Or even the size of a swimming pool.
Right.
When the water's filled, when it rises up, it automatically overflows underneath side of the web and back down the downpipe.
I see.
So it's recycling all the time, continuous movement that obviously saves water.
So the system then, as you say, it saves not only water, but it also saves energy as well.
Yes, it saves energy, and of course a big item as well is the money factor, where we can actually save, depending whether you're a keen gardener or not, save up to 70% of everybody's water rates, because not only rainwater, we save bath water, sink, shower, and this grey water we can use on a daily basis, unlike rainwater, because that's only any good when it's actually raining.
Indeed, absolutely. So it's fantastic in terms of the water that goes down your sink, instead of being wasted, you can use some of that through the system as well. So you can save water, save energy, but as you say, save money as well. Now, that means that there's a clear incentive for people to buy the product. They'll actually get the money back quite quickly. You mentioned that this has come from your 50 years experience in tooling. So the process of creating this product, you've patented it?
Yes, it's patent pending, and it's been registered in 196 countries, obviously worldwide. Initially from a drawing that, in Yorkshire terms, that I drew on the back of a fag packet.
Yeah.
And I went to Sheffield University with this packet and an idea in my head, where I met Julie Rowe, the head of Department of Design Futures at Sheffield Hallam University, who, by the way, has been fantastic.
Right.
Along with Matt Willox, the designer.
Yes.
So they launched it as a full-scale university project. And from the prototypes, 3D printing, we went on to have the injection mould tooling manufactured, and we're now in production and ready for sales. So taking in mind that we can save so much money, save water for the environment, I think
it's a no-brainer, isn't it?
Now, I would hope so.
I hope so too. How long then has that process been in terms of from idea, and as you mentioned, taking an idea and a sketch on the back of the fag packet, even through to getting the support from Sheffield Hallam University, prototyping, through to being ready to launch to market? How long did that take?
It's taken about 18 months.
Yeah.
From the concept, about 2 years, but approaching the university about 18 months.
Right. So you've gone through that process quite fast, really, relative to other product designers. Have there been hurdles? Have there been significant challenges on the way that you've had to overcome?
There's been tremendous hurdles, mainly financial,
right.
Raising the money, because I've applied to the Innovate UK government grant for money.
Yes.
I did manage to get a £5,000 voucher,
right.
Which I was very pleased about.
Yeah.
Under Melport Plastics Limited.
Yes.
And other than the fittings that I've spoken about, we've gone on from there and created a computerised brain box which orchestrates the flow of water that I've collected from the invention, and I distribute this to the toilet, hose pipe, intermittent water feeding for hanging baskets, window boxes, tomato plants, and we're even going to put a chip in it whereby if you're away on holiday, a simple phone call and you can turn the system on and be happy sat in your deck chair with your feet up and think of your plants blooming.
So that's absolutely remarkable, and that's integration with, I suppose, the so-called Internet of Things and smart technologies.
It's a smart meter for water, yeah. Actually.
Right, superb. And so you've created that as well. Now, brilliant. You mentioned just a moment or two ago, one of the challenges has been finance, in terms of financing development of the product. How have you approached that beyond Innovate UK and the voucher that they've provided? Have you used your own capital? Have you had a support from the banks? It's really interesting for me and for listeners in terms of how you've managed to get to where you've got to in something that perhaps has been quite financially intensive.
Yes. Basically, I've had to do everything myself.
Yes.
As far as registering the patents to save on patent fees,
yeah.
From attorneys, design and everything. University have done it. Electronic-wise, GAA Assembly in Rotherham have been fantastic.
Right.
The toolmakers, Kelland at Huddersfield, have been fantastic. They've spread the tooling cost over 12 months.
Right.
Instead of net 30 days normal business methods.
Yeah.
So I've had quite a bit of help from local people, mainly gardeners, that see the benefits of what you call a superb idea.
Indeed.
So they've put their savings, basically, a few thousand, and I've sold a few shares off to build a bit of revenue up so I can keep continuing. But there's not a lot of help from outside.
So
even government talk all this money to lend to people, and to actually try and get it is very difficult, and it's easy to get money once you've got the product up and running and you're getting orders.
Yes.
Then everybody wants to jump on the bandwagon and offer you money, but to get to that stage is practically impossible. So for any entrepreneur starting up in business, it's a very, very difficult journey.
And you've clearly then been clever in terms of asking your supply chain to collaborate with you and to support you, because if your business is successful, then it's going to be of benefit to them, and you've found suppliers,
yes.
Who've been prepared to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. So you're now then at the point where the product is launched. You can buy the product from your website.
Yes.
So what are your plans in terms of getting out there? How How do you see yourself doing that? And where do you want to be with the product in by the end of the year in terms of sales?
As far as sales are concerned, immediate necessity really is to start producing 4,000 a month.
Right, yeah.
And then gradually build it up, because we can actually manufacture 60 of these components per hour. So manufacture isn't really a program, because all business plans and everything have been based on 40 hours.
Yes.
And having worked for Bartel as a toolmaker in its infancy, who were the originators of injection moulded plumbing fittings, I was there at the early stages, so I knew what could be done as far as toolmaking point of view. And with being a keen gardener, I just dropped on this idea, basically.
So, and that's it, is it? It's the fact that you had the long-standing experience and expertise in industry from toolmaking, and a keen gardener, and you've seen a need for saving water for a product like this, looked around, it wasn't there, and decided to make it yourself.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the invention covers three different products that save water. Now, this one I've just spoken about feeds water, filtered water, by the way, goes back into the drain pipe and away. But I've got an horizontal T-shape whereby you cut the drains off completely, and by doing so, you're saving all rateable value on surface water that a lot of people don't know about, because we are all charged for surface water that drops on our roofs.
And so by using this second invention, you will reduce the surface water that goes
yes.
down into the drains.
Well, where I live in Wath-on-Dern, a chap there, I've been to his bungalow, beautiful bungalow house, and he has 20 water butts down the side of his garden. He's cut his drain pipe off and he's taped a hose pipe into a water butt. But having said a water butt, he has actually got 12 water butts down the side of his bungalow.
Right.
And he joins them up with a hose pipe looped between each one.
Yes.
He's cut the drains off completely, sealed the drains up. He's had Yorkshire Water out to verify it. And his water rates are £12 a quarter.
Right, so
from around about £41 a month. So anyone, if they decide to use this horizontal diverter and feed the water onto the garden, say.
Yes.
They can save.
They're not only saving water, they're not only doing something.
Surface water off of the roofs.
Yeah, that's quite
now,
remarkable.
An article from the Sunday Express, June last year, entitled Alan Titchmarsh's Tips on Eco-Friendly Watering, says that 20,000 litres of water falls on an average house per year. And water is just surface water is charged, or domestic water, around about 175 to 250. So there's considerable saving there. But also with this horizontal, the invention covers any diameter pipe. It could be a metre diameter.
Right.
And the invented embodiment bisects the pipe volume into half. So we've actually got two D-shaped apertures instead of one full diameter volume. So we have a water inlet on the top half of the pipe that flows through. And then on the bottom half, we have a water outlet. So we actually have water travelling in different directions simultaneously in the same pipe, which is unique. If you can imagine, you've got water crossing over each other in the same pipe, whereas every other method, you need a dual-purpose pipe, a water inlet, water outlet, and taking it to its nth degree. If we're talking about all these here floods in the northeast, we can be talking about a metre diameter pipe, and we can feed the water from the floods into a man-made reservoir and then pump the water from the reservoir right through the underneath side into another reservoir that's been man-made, so we can direct water to wherever we want it to go.
So the applications here then go way beyond the domestic into flood prevention and mitigation, into significant industrial use as well.
Yes. Well, talking about industrial use, not only water, but we can put electric cables through.
Yeah.
Domestic cables, but also we can put data cables underneath on the bottom part of the web.
Right.
So we don't have to have two pipes again with a direct electricity supply.
So these pipes can carry
data. Both.
Yeah.
Or it could carry petrol or oil, all working within the same pipe.
So it sounds like the potential uptake for you is
phenomenal.
Significant.
Yeah.
You listen to Business Live on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And in the studio at the moment, I'm talking with Melvin Davenport of Melport Plastics about WattFlow. And Melvin's been talking with us about his invention, WattFlow, which can save water, save energy and save money, but also the potential for what you've invented goes well beyond that too. Now, Melvin, we only have a minute or two to wrap up, I'm afraid, and I think we're going to have to get you back onto the program again in the future because this is so fascinating. But first of all, I think it's worth our listeners knowing where they can find out more about you, about Melport Plastics and about WattFlow. And of course, you have the website now. There's a fantastic animation as well, which demonstrates exactly how the product works. So it's worth us giving out the WattFlow address.
Yes, it's wattflow.com.uk. The part of the website's there, like Jamie's told you, but we are adding to it where you can actually buy direct from the website, because it's only this last week or two we've had the completion of the injection mold tool making and we are now in production, so we're adding the price and you can buy direct through the website.
Through the site. So that's wattflow.co.uk. Well, Melvin, thank you so much for joining us on the programme today.
Thank
We'd love to get you back on in the future and find out more. Melvin Davenport, Melport Plastics, and do take a look at wattflow.co.uk. So this is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org. We'll play another quick track of music. This is The Cookies. I'm Into Something Good.
This is Sheffield Live.
You're listening to Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And we've been hearing this morning from Melvin Davenport of Melport Plastics and WattFlow. What a fascinating invention and innovation with a huge number of practical applications domestically and of course in an industrial and business use too. You can find out more about Watflow at their website, watflow.co.uk. We'll be following Melvin's journey with great interest, this new product that he's launched. And it's got to the point where prototype ready and now ready to sell. And if you've just tuned in and you've missed all that, well, you've missed a treat, but don't worry, because you'll be able to catch up with the podcast of today's programme, which will be up on the Sheffield Live website from about 11 a.m. today, sheffieldlive.org. Now, last night I went along to the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network's summer social event, and that took place at Fusion, the Fusion Cafe on Arundel Street, of course, part of the Ruskin Mill Education Trust as well. And well known as a great cafe, a great location in the city. But about 60-70 social entrepreneurs turned up to the meeting and summer social last night, where they heard about a new grant program being run by Sheffield Social Enterprise Network and Unlimited. And that programme opens a week today. So next Friday, the programme is open for applications. And in next Friday's show, we'll make sure we can tell you how you can apply. But in the meantime, I caught up with Chair of Sheffield Social Enterprise Network, Colette Weimer, and had a word with her last night about the grant programme and what it's going to mean for social entrepreneurs in Sheffield. We'll hear from Colette now.
Well, I think that it's really exciting and encouraging that Unlimited have approached us to actually facilitate and manage and select the successful applicants for this funding. I think what it shows is that they recognise the importance of our members and that they want to reach out to that particular audience. Unlimited have a great reputation nationally. We want the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network to be very, very much about supporting the sector that already exists here and the good work it does, and highlighting that. And so the fact that they've chosen Sheffield as the first place to actually pilot this model of funding for a cohort is really great. It'll help to build our membership, it'll help to build awareness of what we do, but really, you know, the network is here for its members, and one of the biggest challenges for our members is funding. The other thing is working together, and that's what the network's all about, is about bringing people together.
Now, that's what the network's been doing successfully for quite a while now.
Yeah, we relaunched the Social Enterprise Network back in March of last year, I think it was. And since then, we've done quite a lot of work to build the foundations. But we absolutely want to get bigger and bolder about being that collective voice for the sector, and really demonstrate what already is happening. Because if you're involved in social enterprise in Sheffield, you know there's a great deal of stuff going on and it's really exciting. But if you're outside of that, you might not be so aware. We want to make sure policy and funding and the infrastructure are there to support the social entrepreneurs that we work with.
Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. If your business has financial challenges requiring professional insights and solutions, Begbies Trainer can help. We provide advice designed to help people and companies deal successfully with debt and financial problems. And wherever possible, we will find the best solution that allows for active steps towards financial recovery. Begbies Trainer is an independent business rescue and recovery specialist. We're committed to providing a rapid and responsive service based on in-depth experience, professionalism and independent specialist expertise. Contact our Sheffield office on 0114 285 9500 or visit begbies-trainergroup.com.
This is Business Live, Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM and sheffieldlive.org with me, Jamie Veitch. And in the programme today, we've heard from Jay Bayani talking about when is it too hot to work? What is the law? Jay Bayani is a lawyer and the MD of Bayani HR and Employment Law. And she gave us the lowdown on what the law says about workplace temperatures and what you can wear to work as well. We've also been talking about the latest Office for National Statistics figures about jobs created in the UK and how many of those are self-employed, and about various a tribunal relating to Uber about the gig economy and how workers are classified. We've also, after Jay, we heard from Melvin Davenport of Melport Plastics talking about his innovation, his invention, WattFlow, and the potential impact of that in terms of saving money, saving water, and saving energy. And that innovation, which is launched now by WattFlow. And we heard from Colette Weimer of the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network talking about the impact of a new grant program. And that grant program launches next Friday, open for applications from next Friday. I think the closing date is likely to be September on that, and it's Unlimited and the Sheffield Social Enterprise Network working together on that. So this program will be back on air next Friday from 9 a.m. through to 10 a.m. So do tune in then, but don't go away now, because next up on Sheffield Live is our fantastic folk music programme. Thank goodness it's folk, from 10 a.m. all the way through to noon. So tune in, stay tuned, and enjoy that. Thanks for listening today. Thanks also to Sangeeta in the studio with me as our sound engineer. And we'll play out with a track of music. Now, the Big Eyes Family Players and Friends, they're appearing at the Folk Forest at Tramlines this weekend. So you can go down and enjoy them. And we'll play out with their track, Greenland Bound.
This is Sheffield Live.